Well, this is Sandy Rios, and this is unusual because I'm coming to you live from a conference that I've been attending all week. It's called Liberty Pastors Camp. It's in Williamsburg, Virginia, beautiful, beautiful, historic Williamsburg, Virginia. And we've been having meetings pillar to post, and they have been so powerful. This conference is geared for pastors to sort of do a seamless understanding of the issues, challenging them to engage with all of them, giving the history of the country and its Christian roots. It's very, very inspirational. E.W. Jackson is here with me, and also Dr. Robert Malone will be here this afternoon. Alex Newman is talking about, I think, the climate. And William Federer, of course, one of my favorites. Chad Connolly, who's from South Carolina, who's a political overachiever. I guess he knows about all things political. But Rick Scarborough also is part of this. And we just heard a presentation this morning from Dr. Melanie Kreitz-Backert. She is a surgeon, a reconstructive surgeon on the pelvic area. And she gave this spellbinding, but very just... Honestly, I cried. I never heard a surgeon talk in a way that I would cry, but I cried because of what they're doing to our children with transgender surgeries. So at this event, which is led by Paul Blair, who's a former Chicago Bear, who's become a good friend of mine through the years, he and his wife Cindy, it's powerful stuff as they challenge these pastors. So it'll be interesting to see how the pastors respond. Maybe we can find out later. But today my first guest is going to be Bob McEwen. Bob is a former congressman from Ohio. He's the head of the Council for National Policy, and he's just a great. He knows lots of history. He's one of my favorite people. So we had the most engaging conversation, and that's what you're going to hear today. First, I want to remind you that we are. Strong sponsors are pre-born, and they're sponsors of us. It works both ways because they're in the business of, you know, just in the most redemptive, beautiful way, showing pregnant women their babies in utero. And when they do that, the women choose to keep their babies. Most of them do. It is powerful. It's $28 for one ultrasound, and we'd be so grateful for your generosity. And it would, of course, have helped support this show. And you can do that by going to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, I hope you just sit back and relax and enjoy my discussion with the Honorable Bob McEwen. You won't be sorry. He's very interesting in every way on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
All right, Sandy Rios here. We're coming to you live from Williamsburg, Virginia, beautiful, historic Williamsburg, and we're here at the Liberty Pastors Camp. All right, so what's the Liberty Pastors Camp? You've heard me interview Paul Paul Blair many times. Paul is a former Chicago Bear who's become a very good friend, and this is his baby, and I'm telling you, it is dynamite. It is how can you explain it? It's a kind of a walkthrough, a survey of America's Christian roots, and it's for pastors because so many of them don't seem to remember what the Christian roots are. And it's trying to encourage them to know why America really is a Christian nation, why our foundations are that, and out of that, hoping to encourage them to embrace everything as they preach, not just talk about certain things, not just the books of the Bible, but applying the books of the Bible to what's going on in the world. So anyway, we'll talk more about that. But sitting across from me is a good friend. His name is Bob McEwen. Now, Bob was a congressman from the state of Ohio for many years, in which he distinguished himself in a lot of different ways. He's not there anymore, but he is now the president of Council for National Policy, which I'm part of. It's kind of, we can't really say too much about it, can we, Bob? Let's just say it's a It's a good group, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
Well, good. I can explain to you how it came about.
Okay.
That is that when Ronald Reagan was president, the people that were supportive of him, as you know, the left controlled the Congress and the media and all the rest. And the independent conservative groups that were struggling on their own, there wasn't a place where they could all get together and work as a team. And so I described the Council for National Policy, it's CNP, it's similar to a chamber of commerce. A chamber doesn't sell shoes, but it has people who do. It doesn't sell cars, but it has people who doesn't sell houses, but it has people who do. And CNP doesn't do anything. But it has members that do everything.
I started to say. And so well, then why would you want to join? They don't do anything now.
So it has members that do everything. And there's one spot where they can't tell each other what to do, but they can have an entity where they join together for a cause. And they meet three times a year, again, not for any of their own purposes, but for whatever is best to the conservative cause. Liz and I joined the third meeting back in 1982. And as you mentioned, it's been my privilege to head it for over a decade.
Over a decade, wow. Uh-huh. All right, I have some other questions for you. Ohio. You're from southern Ohio?
Yes.
And did you grow up there?
Place called Hillsboro.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that place.
I'm the seventh congressman from Hillsboro, population 5,000.
So, Bob, McEwen is Scottish, right?
Yes, ma'am.
You look Scottish. Mm-hmm. I could actually see you in a kilt. Have you ever worn one?
Well, my cousins have and my brothers have, but I'm not sure I have.
There's still time. You know, my son went to St. Andrews in Scotland, and so we went over often. And we go to these kilt stores, mm-hmm. and they are just gorgeous, aren't they?
There's the McEwen kilt and the McEwen clan.
Like the plaid? Yeah.
The plaid. My niece went to St. Andrews.
And they have things that hang that are distinct, like pelts or... Mm-hmm. Just certain not artifacts.
My son is just 100% Scottish. Just all white face. He gets a sunburn going to the car, and he wears his kilt and all. You can spot him. You can tell his heritage.
You know what? I love it. I have some Scottish in me too. So I confess. I don't know if you've ever read David McCullough's book, The Pioneers. Have you ever read that?
No, I haven't.
Oh my goodness!
I need
Bob.
To do that.
Well, it's about settling the Ohio Territory, which, as you know, because you're
book.
A historian.
I have the book.
I love that book. I listen to books more than I read them, and I listened over and over again to different parts of it. It really paints such a beautiful, vivid picture of what it was like to settle in the West, the good and the bad, mm-hmm. the beauty of the Ohio River.
Yep.
He talks about how pristine and clean it was. It's yep. You would love it because you love history.
Sandy, I will. I can't wait. We're going to Ukraine tomorrow. I need something to listen to on the way. I will make point.
I think you'll do that. And when you do, we'll have to talk about it.
Good.
All right. So you served how long? I know you had different iterations in the Congress.
In the legislature in Columbus, and then six terms in Washington. Yeah.
So you grew up in Ohio. So I grew up in Illinois. Mm-hmm. But my question for you is how different is your state than it was when you were growing up there?
Well, it's we went through a stage of discouraging savings and investment. As you know, in the 1920s, when America moved into electricity, which then allowed people to stay home and have refrigerators and automatic dishwashers and that sort of thing, as well as created cars. And so the cars came from Detroit, where they were assembled. Ohio was number one in glass at Toledo, number one in rubber, the rubber capital of the world in Akron, where Charlie Goodyear and Harvey Firestone were from. And it's barely number one in auto parts, barely second in number two in auto assembly, second only to Michigan, and then number three in steel. So the richest city in the world was Detroit, Michigan, up through the time that they elected Mayor Coleman Young. And he turned it to the ditch. It's now the poorest city north of the Rio Grande. And then the second richest city in America was Cleveland. And so both of those went to racism as opposed to performance and discouraging. All of that is beginning to turn around. Fortunately, Vivek Ramaswamy is going to be our next governor.
Do you think so?
And Ohio is just in a genuine, genuine ascendancy, as is America, by the way. Yeah. America is just coming back. Just to put it in context, there's a thing called FEI, the way that you judge place is foreign economic investment. And people invest in countries where they see a future. Oh. So if you're Africa or Australia or wherever. And so the EU, the European Union, FEI, foreign investment foreign economic investment in 2023 and 2024. Both of those years was $100 billion in the EU. And the EU that 15 years ago had the same economy as America, it's now only half as large as America's is. Under Donald Trump, in the first 6 months that he was president in 2025, is now between $10 and $13 trillion of FEI, foreign economic investment, as around the world everybody's taking money that used to go to China or used to go to India. It's all flowing to the United States. So the United States right on the cusp of taking off like a rocket.
I'm going backwards again, because I want people to know how Ohio was a very important state in our history when they finally became a state. I think of the different, like the guys in the cabinet who served with Abraham Lincoln, whose names don't roll off my tongue right now.
Well, they're all Ohioans, that's right.
They're Ohioans,
That's right. Edward Stanton was Secretary of the Army. He was from Steubenville. And then Salmon Chase, who was the Treasury Secretary. Right. It was really a critical time. You had to finance this war, and then he became Chief Justice. But I tell people that up through to the Civil War, we're in Virginia at the moment, half of all American history is in Virginia, and you go through Jefferson and Washington and Patrick Henry and all that. But then after the Civil War, we had 10 presidents between Abraham Lincoln and Roosevelt, and six of them were from Ohio. And history thereafter moved to Ohio. So the Wright brothers and Thomas Edison and Barney Kroger, and the list just goes on and on and on. Ohio was the very center and continues to be very much so, especially as we see New York and New England collapsing.
One other thing, because I'm sorry, I'm stuck on Ohio, but you don't mind, do you?
I love it.
One of my favorite places to visit is the Wright brothers' home.
Yes.
Their museum and home.
Mm-hmm.
It is, and people don't know history. These guys are kids, and you can see they've got on the walls their calculations, their math calculations, home. I don't think they went to school.
Sandy,
self-taught.
What you need to remind people to grasp is how young this country is. The country is only 237 years old. Our Constitution is only 237 years old. And so if you divide that by three, you get 81. So it's 80 years from Washington until Lincoln. It's 80 years from Lincoln until Roosevelt, 80 years from Roosevelt to today. So a person 80 years old has lived a third of the history of the United States. Now, Mr. Bergman, who was my grandparents' next door neighbor, was the accountant for the Wright brothers.
And you're kidding!
And they went to a little restaurant there in South Dayton. A fellow by the name of Bill Patterson ran the restaurant. And where you lose most of your money is in the till, when people get into the till. And so usually the owner or somebody reliable does it. And he rigged it such that if you opened the till, it rang a bell, so he could look over to see who was getting in the till. When he did that, people liked it and said, can you do that for me? And so he began making them and formed the National Cash Register Company as he made these cash registers. But the Wright brothers were there, and they were friends, and he would often help them financially. He had a large field that they would do their experiments on. And so then that place is now been turned into an Air Force base. It's called the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Bill Patterson was the one that created NCR. So Ohio was the driver behind a lot of good things for our country.
Yeah, and so in case people don't know, Orville and Wilbur Wright perfected the bicycle. I don't know if they were the original inventors of the bicycle. Yeah. And then they invented, the airplane.
And Orville died in 1948. And so you think World War II, you see those massive airplanes in World War II. And you would think that, you know, if it weren't for me.
Isn't that something?
And it's the idea. See, they had an idea that if you had it flat at the bottom and a curvature at the top, that concept, that as air went over the top of the wing, it created a vacuum called lift. And once you had that idea and how the wing works, then you can make everybody, the French could do it, everybody in the world can make all kinds of planes, all different sizes. But from the time as we can, all memorial, people dreamed of someday flying. From then up until Wilbur and Orville, and once they conceived it, then from then on.
Which brings me, you touched on this, I just heard you speak, and I've heard you speak a lot, I should say. I love, Bob does, he talks about history, he's just has so many things in his head, anecdotes and speeches, and I love it, I really
well,
do.
Thank
Bob.
You, Sandy.
Yeah, so So. You said something about the exceptionalism of the United States, which I'm really big into. When Phyllis Schlafly was still living, mm-hmm. I worked with her on that. There was the patent system here, you know, has been very corrupt. I'm sure you know all about that. But there was a particular bill in Congress, which I can't remember now. But she and I worked on that. I wasn't the only one. And we did press conferences. I ended up writing a paper about it, or a magazine article. Not a magazine article. An article for, I think, Politico. My point is, the thing that I learned, that I reflected on, was how many things have been invented by Americans, and the reason why that was possible. There's been other countries that have lasted for a long time. They didn't come up with these kinds of inventions, Bob. Mm-hmm. Why? Why was America able to produce so many people who invented so many incredible things, like the airplane and the bicycle and cars and all the rest of it?
We have a biblical value system which respects human life, and which allows for creativity, and thou shalt not steal. And so the patent allows people to succeed and not have the rich and powerful steal it from them. So I've often asked the question, you got what, 1.3 billion people live in China, 1.4 billion live in India. Why is it, out of all of those people, half of the population of the world, why is it there's not one Thomas Edison among those? Well, I believe that there were, but because of a socialist system that punishes productivity and attacks and rewards negligence and steals from those that produce, because of the freedom that is America, that's why America creates more books, more plays, more symphonies, more copyrights, more inventions than the other 96% of the world combined.
Isn't that something? When I was working on this patent thing, I learned also that King George, in England at least, it didn't matter what you invented. King George owned it.
Owned it.
So,
right.
You know, you had no ownership of your ideas. And that's what also caused ideas to flourish and people to invent all these wonderful things. I love that. Now, you love economics. You study business, right? In Ohio, Florida?
Yes. My undergraduate degree was in business administration with a major in economics,
All right. So, economics, you know, I wish, if we could just package your presentation today and send it to Congress, for heaven's sake. People don't understand economics.
Let me tell you, that's exactly true. Let me just emphasize for a moment. The key to America and why it's vulnerable at the moment, that people like the candidate for mayor in Chicago or in New York and elsewhere, these people say, we're going to give you these things. They do not know, and this is serious, and particularly in Congress, it's a real problem. People do not know, Sandy, what creates wealth or how wealth is created. Now, they know how to steal it. They know how to tax it. They know how to redistribute it. Bernie Sanders always talked about redistributing. You remember when de Blasio was running for president, he said, there's plenty of wealth in this country. It's just the way it's distributed. And so they don't understand that wealth is not distributed. So I use the example. You're driving out through Iowa, and on both sides of the road, mile after mile, is corn. Then you get Nebraska. On both sides of the road, wheat, mile after mile after wheat. Next country in the next state is Colorado. You get to Colorado, and you go to Denver, you say, it is terrible. It is absolutely terrible the way wheat is distributed in this country. It's terrible the way that corn is distributed in this country. And people who don't understand how it works, they say, well, yeah, we should take that corn and we should give it to people. Iowa shouldn't have it. And you just want to scream at the top of your lungs. Corn isn't distributed. Corn is grown. Wheat is not distributed. It's created. Wealth is not distributed. Wealth is created. And in America, we know, and anybody who grows up on a farm, anyone who went to 4-H, they understand this, and the whole country did. That's why Thomas Jefferson was really fearful that the country would become run by the cities, because the cities wouldn't know how wealth was created. And in fact, it wasn't until Franklin Roosevelt that we passed the 50% mark that more people lived off of a farm than on a farm. And now only 2% of the population of America produces the goods and services, so that you can have AOC and these other people say, why don't we just give these things? And they don't know where wealth came from. And that's the most critical thing, that as we begin to understand it again, that America creates as the fountain of wealth. If you understand how it's created, and let me just quickly say how it is, it's only created one way. That is by making something that someone else wants, so that they voluntarily, that's the key word, free, they freely reach in their pocket, and they give you a reward for what you created, because at the end of the exchange, they are both better off. And if you are not better off, then you don't make the exchange. And that's the only way that wealth is created. Now, socialists come along, they want a ticket. Say, oh, you want a car? I'll steal it from this guy and give it to you. And look at me, I gave you the car. Well, but you didn't create any wealth. The degree to which one person benefits, the degree to which the other one is diminished. So under free enterprise, both are better off. They both are richer than they were. They both have created wealth. And anybody who grew up, raised hogs, who sold corn, and they understand how that works. But these kids that grow up in New York, and they have no clue, and so they do as promised to steal from the and people who vote for that because they don't understand as well. So yeah. Your question went right to the heart of America's future. That is, we must educate people on how wealth is created.
Like candidates like Mondami for mayor of New York City thinks he can give everything away, and the people actually believe it, so he's in first place. But I you know, one way someone explained to me that helped was socialists or communists or whatever, they think there's like a limited amount of money. There's a pile of resources and money. But the truth is, there is no limit to that pile.
Exactly.
The creation is not limited.
Exactly.
And I guess that's why, you know, as much debt as we're in, 33 trillion, something like that, President Trump, I mean, it might be possible to outgrow that debt.
Of course it is.
Which we think it's such a burden. It's a different way of thinking of things. It's not a shirking of paying off the debt, but we could grow to the point where we could pay off that debt.
Well, that's why I mentioned to you about the foreign investment. Everybody knows where the future is. And in the future, what happened was that the left, beginning under Bill Clinton, that they began to take money from small towns. It used to put it in the bank. They loaned it to you to buy a car or a house. Beginning in the 1990s, they took that money. Instead of loaning it to you, they put it in a bundle. They gave it to the people in New York who invested in China. And so all the new factories and all the new buildings and all the new highways and all the new sewer systems and airports were all built in China, and everything in America continued to diminish over these next 30 years. For anyone who's listening and they have any interest in this sort of thing, there's a thing called FRED. It's called the Federal Reserve Economic Data, FRED.gov. It's controlled basically by the St. Louis Federal Reserve Board. They have every chart in the world. You can go back as long. If you like economics, it's a candy store. The median income, that's the median income for the whole country, it continues to climb until 1996. Now, that's a couple of years after they passed the World Trade Organization, took in China, gave them all of its privileges, which they still have, by the way, as a developing country, even though they have the second largest economy on the planet. But then we leveled off, we flattened, and from 1996 to 2006 to 2016, that's 20 years. It's perfectly flat. It's literally only $200 difference in that 20-year period. And that's when all the stores closed on Main Street. People didn't have their jobs. People then went to drugs and the chaos that we've seen going on in the interim, and people lost hope. Donald Trump came in and said, everything you're doing here is wrong. We're not going to do this. We're going to restore America. We're going to make America great. We're going to invest here. And under Donald Trump, that chart that was flat for 20 years jumps $7,800 in just 4 years.
Wow.
And the stock market in America went up 55%. The stock market in Beijing in China went down 47%.
Wow.
Now stop and think about it. Half of all the wealth of China is wiped off the map. Now, who does that offend? That deeply offends all of the money markets in Silicon Valley and in New York, who have taken trillions of your dollars out of Main Street, Hillsboro, Ohio, and sent them to China. And now the returns are coming in America, not there, which makes people upset. And so they own CBS. They own Disney. They own ABC. They own the media organizations. And they know we must get rid of Donald Trump because Donald Trump, and so he comes in. Inflation comes back. We make every accommodation to Russia and to China, and the through inflation and otherwise, the wealth in America drops 58%. So it's barely higher than it was when Trump went in. Under Biden, it went down $5,800. So now America said, no, we don't want that. And what we're seeing now is a restructuring of in which you're going to see the United States is the all and be all, in which every country in the world is coming to America. And that's why you have this peace all over the place. Azerbaijan and Armenia have been fighting for 33 years. Donald Trump said, we're going to put a tariff on, you've got a 50% tariff on all American goods. We're going to put a 25% tariff on everything you make. So they call and they say, no, please don't do that. Please don't do that. They said, well, you guys are killing each other. Why don't you stop it? If you'll stop that, I'll talk to you about tariffs. And after 33 years, Azerbaijan and Armenia come to the East Room of the White House and sign an agreement and say, we're not going to fight anymore. And they look and they both point to Donald Trump and say, well, because of him, that's why we're having this peace. So what America is doing is bringing peace and prosperity. Those are the two things that politicians are supposed to deliver.
To the world.
Peace and prosperity to the world because of the decision we make. Now, that's going to make the same people. It's going to make the Joe Scarboroughs and the CNN people. They're going to scream bloody murder because we are dissecting their world, and we're going back to what made America great.
You know, Bob, I was on the radio. I started on the radio in Chicago in the mid-90s for Salem, and it was during that time, Herbert Walker Bush, and this whole talk about, opening the southern border and the Canadian border and free trade and all of this, the rising boat lifts all ships and all of that. And I have to tell you, my dad was a businessman. I am not educated in business, but I just thought this can't be right. We cannot send everything overseas and still thrive. What are they thinking? And that's long before things started shutting down. But I'm wondering, how do you think that we were fooled into that? I mean, I can understand businessmen just wanted to make money, and they told themselves they were doing something righteous. That's how I look at it. But what are your thoughts about how in the world we got on that track where we destroyed our own country economically?
If you look at economics with no values, now it's interesting that the socialists always claim that they care about people, and yet what the left said was that if somebody else can make a car more cheaply than we can, then we should just buy the car from them. And what happens to the glass in Toledo and to the auto assembly in Detroit and the steelmaker in Pittsburgh, that's their toughie. And so all of the labor unions signed up for that. And they said, so then you would go to, we're going to have clean jobs, is what George Bush kept talking about. We're going to have clean jobs. We're going to do everybody's nails, and we're going to do their hair, and we're going to mow their lawn. We're going to have clean jobs. Well, let's get back to what you and I said a moment ago about creating wealth, what most people don't understand. The more complicated the endeavor, the greater the reward or profit. So if I wash your car, there's a little bit of profit in that. But if I, let's take repair a car. If you have a wrecked car, to tear it all apart and get rid of the broken part, that doesn't take much skill. But if you have to restructure the frame, or you have to redo the computers, that takes more skill. And the more talented the skill, the greater the reward. So what we did was we created all these things. We created the steel mills. We created the auto industry. We created, but we shipped them all overseas because those people using cheap labor could make them more cheaply. And they said, well, that's, isn't that wonderful? Because now you can buy it cheaper. But you didn't have anything with which to buy it. That's the piece that they didn't catch. See, a free enterprise raises people's wealth. It makes them richer. Now, labor unions tell the opposite of that, but it's not true. As you prosper, you lift people up. So Henry Ford paid $5 a day for anybody to work at the Ford Motor Company when the average payment was $2.50. So he paid twice as much as everybody else to do what? To have people that would leave, to get the very best workers. And that's where blacks came from the South, came up and began to work in the auto assembly when we did that. Now, when you get rid of those jobs, then they don't have any place to go. And that's what we did. We said, we're going to have these clean jobs. A person that understood that was Donald Trump. And Donald Trump said there with 15 other Republicans, of course, all the Democrats were opposed. But 15 said, this is good. He said, nope, what's happening on the borders is bad. We need to tighten the border. And China is not our friend. And after 4 years he's in office, the entire country and the whole world said, Donald Trump was right. That chaos on the border and what's happened with China, they're not our friends. And so now that it's righted itself, he is telling these people that when you don't allow us in the European Union, you go down, you go to Paris, you go to London, you go to Berlin, you don't see any American cars. Why? Because of the 38% tariff on American cars. So Donald Trump says, fine, we'll put a 38% on your cars. Now, suddenly,
Which is brilliant.
Suddenly, Germany is absolutely scared to death. You add 38% to every BMW, to every Volkswagen, to every Mercedes, and they're out of business. Yeah. And so what do? They come running and say, no. And so what has happened? We've gone to 15 on both sides, which means now we're taxing theirs at 15%. They have to accept ours from 38 to 15, which means they're going to buy our more, which is restoring jobs, and you see the auto industry beginning to take off. It's just a matter of leadership and common sense.
All right. There's one other thing. Just because I have you here, you explained a few minutes ago about, you talked about purchasing, and you talked about first, second, and third-party purchases. Mm-hmm. I just think it would be really helpful to have you explain that in whatever way you can
without a screenshot. The chart helps. The chart helps. But very simply, if I'm going to buy something for myself, I care about two things. I care about the price, and I care about the quality. And I stand there and look at that shirt. I stand and look at that watermelon. I stand and look at that car, and I say, the price, does it satisfy me for what I want? And no one can make that decision as well as you can. As I say, you might pay $5 for a cup of coffee at 7 in the morning, for which you wouldn't pay 50 cents at 3 in the afternoon. When you're buying something for yourself with your money, you care about two things. You care about price and quality. That's called a first-party purchase. The second-party purchase is when one of those two things is not controlled by you. Let's suppose that you're going to buy something, but you're not going to consume it. You're going to give it to someone else. And so you care about the price because you're paying for it, but you're a little more flexible on the quality. That is, you say, well, by the time it breaks, they'll be married for 3 years. They won't remember who gave it to them anyway. And so we've all bought things for people we never would have bought for ourselves. We care about the price, but we're not. Well, let's suppose the other way around. Suppose we're going to consume it, but we're not going to pay for it. And so the waitress comes along and says, would you like to have some orange juice? And you say, well, how much is it? And she says, it's $4.50 a glass. And you say, well, no, really, I'm fine. I don't need any. She looks and says, oh, no, you got the pancakes. Well, it comes with the pancakes. Well, in that case, pour away. I'll take two glasses, three glasses. You might even walk off and leave half a glass. You wouldn't if you were paying for it. You care about the quality because you're consuming it. You don't care about the price because you're not paying for it. That's called a second-party purchase. The final example is a third-party purchase. A third-party purchase is purchasing something with money that's not yours to purchase something that you will not consume. And so I use the example of the guy at work is supposed to go out and buy a gift for the party, and they give him $150, and he buys this 6-foot-tall frog, and he comes back, and everybody laughs and claps and all.
It's a stuffed frog, to be clear.
Yeah, a 6-foot-tall stuffed frog, and it's $149, but it's not his money, so he didn't care, and he's not going to consume it, so he didn't care. So everybody thinks it's all a funny thing, and they all go off. Now, so since it's not his money, he doesn't care about the price. And since he's not going to consume it, he doesn't care about the quality. So if it was $100, he would have spent that. $300, he would have spent that because it's not his money. And besides, he's not going to consume it, so he doesn't care how good it is. So here's the significance of what a person needs to understand. And I discovered this when I was in Congress and I would go to Europe and attend political events. And I'd have the political officer from the embassy that had to attend those things. I'd love a congressman to go with them. I would sit there and they would interpret in my ear. And I would listen to these debates going on and this reports from the floor and all. And it was exactly the same thing as in southern Ohio. It was, whether we're in Portugal or Belgium or wherever, the issues were all the same. And that is that government, when every dime that it spends is money that it took from someone else, is spent by someone that's not their money. So they don't care about the price, and they don't care about the quality. So the more government does, the more waste there is, and the poorer the country is. Because every time you take it from an individual to save and invest and use it for their own benefit, and run it through a third-party system called government, then there's waste in the highways. There's waste. We should do only those things which Abraham Lincoln said a man cannot do for himself. So every time somebody comes along, they're going to do housing, or they're going to do grocery stores, or they're going to do, every time they do something we can do for ourselves, there is going to be waste, fraud, and abuse, and that country becomes poor. And I remember time after time in Congress, Pat Schroeder and all these liberals would stand up. We're the only country that doesn't do this, and we're the only country that doesn't do this. And I would always get, there are 200 other countries you can go to. Leave us alone. If it's so all fired, great. That everybody else does it. We're the only place, and we're the freest, richest because we don't do those things. So that's politics is all about.
The last thing you described is third party.
Third party
and
purchase.
And you said that that's what government, all government spending
all
is
government
third party.
Is third party
which
purchase.
Is why there's so much waste.
Yep.
And abuse.
And it will always be that way.
Which is why maybe the states need more power. That would take away a little bit of that.
Well, you don't want government doing things that it can't do.
Right.
I don't care who runs it or how much they care, there's going to be waste in the highway department. It's just because it's not their money. There's going to be waste in the defense. Right. We limit what government does because we do the only those things. We can't build a sewer system, but I can tell you that, if Procter & Gamble is building a sewer system on their plant, and next door is a small town building another sewer system, the one that the government is running is going to cost twice as much as the private enterprise is doing. It only works that way every time.
Bob, one last question. You mentioned this. I know you're really optimistic, and I am too, actually. But you're really optimistic about the future of this country, but I want to know why you are so optimistic.
Every single thing that you can touch is getting better. It's just unbelievable. I've never been as optimistic in my life. So you take economically, we've got a president. We haven't had a businessman that understood these things, people are leaving their own countries to invest in America. So we've talked about that. We see the restoration. Then the artificial intelligence, that's the key to the future. We were on the cusp that China understood it. China needs power. They built a new power plant every week for over 10 years. They've built a new nuclear power plant every 17 days. And so America, as Newsom, destroying dams, we've been going backwards on all those things. Donald Trump comes in. He understands we're not. This isn't going to work. And so he tells the AI folks, if you'll build your plant, your data center in America, you're going to need power. These public utilities commissions filled with all these bedwetters and environmentalists,
That is not politically correct.
They're never going to approve it. Come 8 or 10 years, we'll be left in the dust. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to supersede. We're going to put a great businessman as Secretary of Energy, another great businessman as Secretary of Interior, and we're going to approve for you to build that data center. You're going to need power. Build your own power. You become your own utility. We'll approve it overnight. And that way, if we see it, that's why all the money is coming to America. So rather than fiddling with Europe, or Canada's just gone off the charts, but China is competing. So rather than messing with China, where government can take it at will, we're going to do it in America. So all these are taking place, which is the wave of the future, just as the internet was built and maintained by Americans, just as the GPS built and maintained by Americans. Now AI is built and maintained only because Donald Trump won. Had Donald Trump not won this election, America would be finished. All of this money and investment would be going to China and AI, the wave of the future. And let me just put it in context. American artificial intelligence, AI consumption of power in the year 2030, that's only 5 years from now, will consume a third of all of the electricity in America. Now, and in 10 years, it would consume as much as we do now. We would have to double the grid. And anybody who knows anything about the people that serve on public utilities commissions, all the leftist environmentalists that attend every hearing, we would never be able to do that had it not been for Donald Trump, who was smart enough and strong enough to say, we're going to bypass all that. You're going to build your own power. And when we do that, so that's just one.
And could I add, and the power will be accessible by the people in that area.
Absolutely.
It's not just for their use.
Absolutely. But the whole AI does all that, those sort of things. Secondly, what's it going to do? AI is going to replace white-collar jobs. It's going to do things that lawyers and accountants and other people do, but the muscular jobs, the air conditioning, the pipe fitters, the muscular jobs, those aren't going to be affected, and those are our people. They're the people that don't sit around and gripe and complain about the country. They're the people that coach Little League, teach Sunday school, mow their lawn, and support the small communities. That's where all of this is now going in the future, not to the big cities where people shoot each other and steal, but in small towns, you're seeing a growth that is the wave of the future. So that's economically. Then politically, we see a reformation. And spiritually, there is just a spiritual upswing that is unlike anything we've seen in our lifetimes. You can't tell when you're in the middle of a revival if that's really a revival. You have to look back and see what the ramifications are. But currently, right now, there is a surging of young people in church and coming to the Lord. For Catholics, for baptisms, services are, churches cannot hold the people that are attending. They're having different services. Not in the TED Talks with the blue, with the artificial smoke and all that, but the folks where they actually are turning to the Bible, you're seeing a real turn. Bible sales this year are up 22% over last year. So in every way that you look, America is just taking off, and I'm excited about it.
I'm too, Bob McEwen. So, hey, listen, thanks for spending time with me. You're off to Ukraine tomorrow.
The national The National Independence Day is next Sunday, and the Presidential Prayer Breakfast, which I was a part of starting some 12 or 15 years ago, is in Kiev on Monday morning, and so we'll be there and come back home on Tuesday.
Yeah, whatever the leadership in Ukraine, there are so many strong, believing Ukrainians who don't deserve what they've gotten in their country. So,
and everyone agrees. Everyone agrees. And only the folks on CNN or something, or would MSNBC, would refuse to acknowledge it. But all of the leaders of the world say that the only person that's been able to knock their heads together to get Zelensky and Putin to finally make some progress is Donald Trump. So the purpose of a politician is to help to bring peace and prosperity, and I see we're on the cusp of both.
I'm sorry, but I just thought of this. I always say, you know, God uses beauty and good looks for his purposes. So Esther the queen, who was so gorgeous, you know, God used her. But she didn't use her beauty for herself. She used it to save her people. And I think we could say that Donald Trump only cares about money. He talks about deals. He's not using that to enrich himself. He's doing money deals and all of these negotiations to save our country and really to save the world. And I think the whole world recognizes that.
And he's the only one who has diminished, lost a third of his income by serving. And what people say, yeah, but he's doing all these deals. His families are doing deals. That's significant, and we should think about it. That is that when Pelosi and Biden's and Obama's and Clinton's become multi, I would say $300, $500, $600 million, the question would be, as Donald Trump Jr. asked the question, how many motel rooms did they fill last night? How many restaurants did they serve? How many buildings did they rent or build? There's a difference between taking graft and taking money for who you are, as the Bidens became multi-millionaires with multiple homes around the world. And you ask, what did they do? What Donald Trump's family, it does things. And you can point to your finger. Yes, they built that building. Yes, they rented that restaurant. Yes, they see every night the number of rooms in each hotel and how many are vacant. And for liberals who have never produced anything, who only talk about what they're going to steal from the people that did produce, we're going to increase taxes on the workers, we're going to increase taxes on the farmer, we're going to take from them, but they've never built anything. So when they see people building things and getting money, they say, well, it's all the same. Look at it. Look at how his net worth has gone up. His net worth has gone up because the family is actually doing something. We can see it. They're not going up as the Clintons came into office completely in debt and then worth, well, just one book deal. People live their entire lives, and the greatest families in the world maybe have $100 million endowment. Obama got $65 million for, quote, one book, unquote, which he wasn't going to write, nobody bought. So they just gave him 60. That's just one deal that he, you know, what did he do for anyone? Well, Donald Trump, the money that they have as a business person is like what he did for others. And that's a significant difference.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, Bob, thank you so much.
Thank you, God
bless
Sandy.
You and your wife, and I hope you have a safe trip.
And you know I'm a big fan of yours and have been for many, many years, and I'm so proud and happy and honored to be with you.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
The FDA finally approved the French abortion pill. And again, there's two pills. They okayed the first one, mifepristone, for chemical abortions up to 7 weeks. Later, that was extended to 10 weeks under Barack Obama. And then under Joe Biden, they opened the door to the FDA approving of mifepristone prescriptions online, through the mail, and without any kind of supervision. And the Supreme Court upheld that unanimous ruling just in 2024. It really is despicable. I'm telling you, it is despicable, given the number of injuries on 10% or so of women who have these chemical abortions, not to mention the loss of life, the trauma of delivering at home. It is a disgraceful thing that our country has done. But Preborn is trying to provide a redemptive way to stop it. They have a pill that can actually reverse that first pill. And the first one is mifepristone. So if a mother has second thoughts when she takes that first pill, if she gets to a Preborn clinic, they can stop that. But if she takes the second pill, which expels the baby, it's too late. And that's why we're trying to educate women, not educate. I hate that. Just really too sterile. We're trying to move their hearts by showing them their baby in utero through ultrasound. That's what Preborn does. That's the emotional trigger, which is genuine and real from the heart of God. That's a baby. And when women see that, they don't take these abortion pills. It stops it before it begins. But both things have to be addressed, and that's what Preborn does. If you would like to help, it's $28 for one ultrasound. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. And please make your most generous donation.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, well, I told you it was going to be fun. I always enjoy talking to Bob. He's a real patriot and just an engaging person with so many stories. Always a pleasure to talk to him and always inspirational. And so I hope you enjoyed it. I want to remind you that Timothy Plan is one of our sponsors. Go to timothyplan.com, timothyplan.com, and, they'll help you figure out how to invest your money in things that you actually believe in. And so I hope you'll do that and, again, help sponsor the show. I want to thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.